We're beginning the book of Ezekiel. The Navi Yechezkel. The Navi Yechezkel prophesied, as we will see in the beginning of the book, many books tell you who was he prophesizing, in whose period of time. But the Navi of Yechezkel doesn't begin with an intro. He just starts talking. He doesn't tell you who he is. He doesn't tell you where the count is. And so he just starts. And then two verses into the Nevuah, into the prophecy, suddenly tells us, hey, who's talking here? It's Yechezkel talking. Okay. And he sees a tremendous vision, as we will see. So who is Yechezkel? So Yechezkel was a prophet during the period of Yoshio, the king of Judea, Yoshio ben Amon. And his prophecies will span the period of the destruction of the temple, the period of the exile. There's an ancient work called the Aruch. The Aruch was a rabbi who, he wrote a work called the Aruch. His name was Rabbi Natan. And he compiled a work, a dictionary, an encyclopedia on chess called the Aruch. Rashi used this book. And in that encyclopedia, under the word Bez Zion, Baz, so or Baz Bez, he says that Yechezkel ben Buzi, Buzi means mocker or mocked, his father was the prophet Jeremiah. And being that Jeremiah was mocked by people, being that Jeremiah was mocked by his own family, so his son Ezekiel was known as Yechezkel ben Buzi, the son of the mocked one, the mocked prophet. So I don't know of any other source for that. The Aruch didn't invent it. Obviously, he took it from some source. But that's the only place I saw that written. So we're going to begin, and as we go along, we'll discuss the prophet. I don't like long introductions, simply because very often talking about the work without seeing it is misleading. Let's begin, and then as we were involved, we'll come back.
So he's in the time of the Yoshio?
Correct.
Somewhere?
Yeah. In the Targum on the Yechezkel. Vayhi Bishloshim Shana. It was 30 years. Doesn't tell us 30 years from when. B'chamisha l'chodesh. B'arvi'i b'chamisha l'chodesh. Was the fourth month. The fifth day of the month. V'ani v'toch ha'gola al nehar kevar. I was in exile outside Israel by the river called River Kevar. Niftechu ha-shamayim, the heavens opened. Va'er'e mar'ot Elokim. And I saw godly visions. It's like a dream. So, the term mar'ot Elokim, visions, why is it in plural? So our sages say that's because all prophets other than Moshe saw the vision like a dream. Wasn't with the clarity that Moshe Rabbeinu saw it. So Yechezkel is starting 30 years after they found the Sefer Torah in the days of Yoshio. He begins as though he's talking, like you said, in first person. Va'ani and I. Whereas other prophets begin with a description, an introduction, who's going to do the talking. So, we're not sure 30 years from when. Is it 30 years from the Jubilee year? Is it 30 years from, like the Targum says, from the days of Yoshio, from when they found that Torah scroll in the temple? We'll hold off on that for now. Let's move forward. Two questions. Number one, do you want me to read it with the ancient tune, the way we do other books of prophets?
Yeah.
Yes? And number two, do you want an Israeli accent or an American accent?
Indian.
Who said that? What do you want, Israeli or American? Israeli? Okay.
The English is
Indian. I hear. Pasuk Bet. Ba'chamisha lachodesh So beforehand he said it was the fifth of the month. Now he continues and says it was the fifth of the month. Hi hashana hachamishit. It was the fifth year. Legalut hamelech Yoyachin. To the exile, the first exile of the king Yoyachin. So 30 years is 30 years from the Jubilee. And 30 years to the Jubilee is also 30 years from when they found that Torah scroll in the days of Yoshio. And they brought it to Yoshio and they said, we found this ancient Torah scroll in the Azara and it was open to this. And he looks at it and it says, all the rebuke, all the warnings of what will happen if the Jewish people go the pagan ways. And then he repents. He says, wait, we can't let this happen. And he leads a great tshuva process in the Jewish people. So at this point, Yoyachin had been king. And when he was king, it was a short-lived kingdom. And then he was exiled by the Babylonian king, by Nebuchadnezzar. And 5 years into the exile, Yechezkel has the following prophecy. So the leadership of Israel has been exiled. When he's betoch hagola, outside in exile, what happened was, after Nebuchadnezzar conquered Jerusalem the first time, he told them, don't rebel against me. And Yehoyakim did rebel against him. And he came back and quashed the rebellion and removed Yoyakim and then appointed his son Yechoniah instead of him. And then he was exiled. And then he said, I'm exiling all the leadership from Babylon, from Israel to Babylon to ensure that there won't be a rebellion again. So the Navi describes it as the exile of the Chorash and the Masger, the blacksmiths, the locksmiths. Our tradition is that Charash and Masker is code for the leadership. He exiled all of the leadership in the hope that he won't have to exile the rest of the Jewish people, and we know that didn't work. The Jews rebelled again, and then he had to exile everyone. So, Yechoniah, it's 5 years into Yoyachin's exile. Hayom, haya, devar Adonai, el Yechezkel, Ben Buzi HaKohen Beretz Kasdim Al Nehar Kevar. So Yechezkel has prophecy. He is Yechezkel, the son of Buzi, who might be Jeremiah, who is a Kohen. We know Jeremiah was also a Kohen from the city of Anatot. Anatot is just outside Jerusalem, in the area that we call Benjamin, right? We learned today in our trip that Benjamin and Judean territory border one another, right? Anatot is a city in Benjamin, and he's having prophecy out in Chutzaretz. But we say a prophet doesn't have prophecy in Chutzaretz. So one interpretation it says is that if he began his prophecy in Israel, he can continue in Chutzaretz. So Yechezkel had already had prophecy, and that's why the Navi begins with Hayo. It had already been that Yechezkel had prophecy. And then Hayad Varashem El Yechezkel Ben Buzi HaKohen Beretz Kasdim, because he had previously had prophecy in Israel, so then he was also able to continue his prophecy in out in Babylon. Just one second. It's a good question. The commentaries say that we will see in what's called the 17th chapter. Yechezkel is having prophecy before the exile. So we know that prophets are not written in chronological order. They're written in the order of the messages that we should learn from them. There's a method to the order, but it's not a chronological order. As we will see when we get to what they call the 17th chapter, we'll see that Yechezkel is back in Israel pre-exile time. So that would be theoretically the beginning of the book, chronologically. Okay. Rashi says that it could be that this prophecy that he's going to tell over now is a prophecy that he already had in Israel. And now Hashem's telling him to tell it over. Okay, so let's move forward. So he's having prophecy, Be'eretz Kasdim, in the land of the Kasdim, which is the, they're part of the Babylonian Empire, Al Nehar Kival, by the river Kival. And the Kabbalists have a big thing about why prophecy settles on a person near a river. River represents life, represents purity. So he has his prophecy by the river. Now, Moshe asked, how did Moshe Rabbeinu have prophecy outside Israel? So it says in the Mechilta, in the beginning of the commentary on Shmos, that before we entered the land of Israel, you could have prophecy outside Israel. It was only after Israel was chosen that we entered the land of Israel. Only after that could you not have prophecy in Chutz La'aretz. Vatehi al nav sham yad Adonai. He had prophecy against his will. We will see throughout the book of Ezekiel, Yad Hashem, the hand of Hashem, which represents the force of Hashem, which represents that the prophecy lost his sanity and received prophecy against his will. So throughout the book of Yechezkel, we're going to see that Yechezkel is repeatedly getting prophecy as Yad Hashem, the hand of Hashem is upon him. That's a term of force. Yechezkel is getting prophecy whether he likes it or not, which in a way is similar to Jeremiah, because the book, right, the book of Jeremiah begins with Jeremiah saying, I'm a kid, I can't have prophecy. He tries to run away from it, and he really suffers from the prophecy he receives. So, Yechezkel is going to prophesy. Pasuk Dalet. Va'erev inei ruach se'ara ma'amin ha'tzafon. I saw, and behold, a wind, a fierce wind came out of the north. So in prophecy, do you have a compass? He knows what's the north. So the term tzafon very often is a reference to tzafun, to what that which is hidden. The north, mitzafon tipatach hara'ah. Jeremiah tells us in the beginning of his prophecy that evil comes from the north. That's the north represents the side that's hidden. If you look at ancient maps, so the Torah always looks at the east as in front. Kedma, in front of you. Kadima is to the east. Mizrach, yes? So if the east is in front of you, so then where is Achor? Where is behind you?
Yama.
Yama, the west. Okay, Kedma, Kedem ve'Achor. Very often the east and the west are. Now, what's to your right? Is the south. The south is to your right if you're facing east. And what's to your left? The north. Now, the word left in Hebrew, small, comes from the Arabic word weak. So the whole idea of the north always represents the weak, the bad, the evil. The left, the side that's weakest is the north. Tzafun, like tzafun, hidden. It's where Hashem's presence is less felt. Okay, so back to our pasuk. So Jeremiah sees Hashem's chariot approaching. That's what's going to happen in a minute. But the first thing he sees is this tremendous wind coming with anger from the north, and it represents the anger of Hashem that's coming to destroy Israel. The coming destruction. Remember, when we hear physical terms in a prophecy, it's not coming to tell us, look at the beautiful view he saw. It's coming to tell us a message, right? The prophet was told that, you know, he's seeing this wind coming from the north. It's the wind from the north is coming from the northern empire of Babylon, and that's because the Babylonian Empire, the way they descended upon Israel was the attack came from the north. They actually entered Israel from the north. And Nebuchadnezzar was given a period to conquer all the other nations. He became a tremendous king before he came to conquer Israel. So that's the idea that the wind is coming from the north. The strong wind is coming from outside Israel. Anan Gadol ve'esh mitlakachat. I saw a tremendous cloud, and I saw a fire that was cackling, that was burning away. Ve'nogalo saviv. And around this cloud, I saw Noga. Okay, what is Noga? Noga will translate loosely as light. There was a halo, there was a light around this cloud. So he sees a wind, a strong wind coming from the north. That's going to be Hashem's chariot, but it's a representation of the destruction Hashem is bringing upon Israel. He sees a great cloud, and there's fire burning around the cloud, and there's a halo around it. Umitocha ke'en ha-chashmal mitocha esh. And as I looked into the cloud, I saw the angel who is called Chashmal. So don't be misled by Ben Yehuda, who named electricity Chashmal. Chashmal in Tanakh is the name of an angel. That's one type of angel. So within the cloud, I see a Chashmal. Within the cloud, I see an angel that's called Chashmal. We will see many different names of angels. So Ezekiel begins the book with a bang. You know, other prophets begin by saying, you guys should stop stealing, you guys should be more ethical, you should take care of the widows, you should take care of the orphans. No, Yechezkel begins with the vision of the highest visions of Kabbalistic visions, and he's describing the heavenly chariot and the approach of Hashem's Shekhinah, what no other prophet described. And our sages say that this description teaches us that Yechezkel was on a different level than Isaiah. He was on a much lower level. That other prophets weren't so impressed.
Ben Yehezkel.
Yeah, other prophets didn't have to give this description. Yehezkel is going to describe the heavenly chariot. Wow! Yeah, because to Yehezkel it was. Our sages say it's like a noble who enters the palace, so he knows what he's going to see there. So he doesn't come back and say, you know, they have chandeliers like this and the doorknobs are like that, and you should have seen how many servants, and even the servants were wearing white gloves. You know, he's going to tell you everything. The noble doesn't do that. But when the guy, the simple farmer, he comes to the palace, he comes home, he's going to spend the rest of his life telling details of what he saw in that palace. I forgot to tell you, the keys have gold handles. I forgot, you know, now I remember. Every minute he's going to tell his kids, I remember another amazing thing I saw in that palace. You know, when the king wants to drink, all he does is tap his cup with a little spoon, and the waiters come rushing in, and again, they, come on. If you're there every day, you don't have to describe it that way. So Yechezkel, our sages say, is like the farmer who entered the palace. So he's describing everything. And our sages saw it as a sign that he was on a lower level than Yeshayo, than the prophet Isaiah. Our sages say they're going to describe the same vision. And Isaiah does it in about 7 verses, and Yechezkel's going to go on and on describing that vision. Yes?
Why
was Yechezkel on a lower level than Yeshaya? I don't know. They're all way above us, you know. I don't know.
Like a reflection of their respective piety, or is it just that he lives in a different era and there's less divine energy in the world or something?
I don't know. No. Right? Interesting. Why was Yeshaya able to be a higher prophet than Yechezkel? I don't know.
It's so.
Now, being that we're talking about the highest Kabbalistic concepts, I don't begin to know what I'm talking about here. I'm going to go with the commentaries, and there are different understandings among the commentaries. So we're going to try to get a rough, crass picture of something that is very spiritual and holy. Umitocha dmut alba chayot, and from within it, within what? Doesn't say. So some say it means from within the halo, that light that I saw surrounding it. Dmut alba chayot, I saw the vision of 4 chayot. So you think chayot are wild animals? No. Chayot are another type of angel. So the previous pasuk spoke about the angel called Chashmal. And from within that I saw 4 angels called Chayot. Vize marehen. And this is what they looked like. Demut adam lahena. They looked like humans. We're going to see later on that Yechezkel is going to describe that the chayot have four faces. They have a face of an ox, a face of a lion, a face of an eagle, and a human face. On each side, they have a different face. So the Navi is focusing on one side. He says they have the face of man. Our sages say Adam is Yaakov Avinu. The chayot have the face of Yaakov. So I told you they have four faces, right? Each one has four. The alba kenafayim le'achat lahem. And each one had four wings. So our sages say that when it says arba'a panim le'echat, it means each face had four faces. We said that the angel had four faces. Our sages understood that this pasuk is not telling you that. Later on, Ezekiel will come back to that. Now, Ezekiel is telling you that every face had four faces, so you ended up with a 16-sided angel. Wow. Because there were four of each. So,
angels?
Each one of the four had 16 faces. And each one of the faces had four wings. So 16 times 4 is 64, right? So that's why our sages understood that the Chaya, each one of these angels, has 16 faces and 64 wings times 4 angels is 256 wings that Yechezkel is seeing. So I wasn't sure if I should address that, but I'll tell you a story. On the hike today, they pointed out that the Jordanians used to shell the orphanage that was at the entrance of Givat Shaul, the orphanage that's called after the rabbi who built it, Maharil Diskin. So the story goes about the Maharil Diskin that he could look at a tree and tell you how many leaves were on the tree. He was a special type of genius. So his students once said, "Rabbi, we'll never know if you're right." So he said, "I'll tell you how you test me." He looked at a tree and he said, "This is the number of leaves that are there." He said, "Now I'm going to turn around. You climb on that tree and take off as many leaves as you want. And then I'll turn back and I'll tell you how many leaves are on. And then count the leaves in your hand and you'll see if I was right." So they did. And he was right. So there's a type of genius that we don't understand. It's not the way we look at a tree. There's a similar story that happened in Bnei Brak. One of the rabbis was lying on his deathbed and they brought him a woman's cloth. To ask him whether the staining that she had was pure or not pure. So he answered them, and they doubted him. They weren't sure if he was right. He was already an old man. He really was on the verge of dying. So they sent it back in a second time without asking him. They made believe. So he said, "I saw this one before." They said, "How do you know?" So he said, "Because the woof and the warp, each one has this number of strings." He was able to tell them on the cloth how many strings were going across and how many strings were going down. So when he passed away, they checked. And actually, someone sat down. I don't know, maybe the guy, I don't know. Sat down and took apart the cloth. He said, "Let me see if they're at." And he was right. Saying, so there's a type of genius that I don't either understand. But I can tell you, I had it twice in my life where I gave the rabbi a book to read. And the rabbi started leafing through the book. And I said, "Aren't you going to read it?" And he said, "Test me." And I did. And then I saw that there's genius that I don't understand. There's, you know, I never saw that. Like, that you give someone something to read and they're just doing this. I don't know. I can't explain it. They say Rav Kook was that way. They say that when the Ritvaz wrote his commentary on the Jerusalem Talmud, he brought it to Rav Kook. And Rav Kook started leafing through it. And the Ritvaz said, aren't you going to read my book? And Rav Kook said, okay, test me. And then he said, and I'll tell you, if you wouldn't have said this and this in your commentary in this tractate, then you wouldn't have had to learn that way on that tractate. And then and that mistake caused you to misunderstand there. So he started giving him comments after he had leafed through it. That's the story, they say. I wasn't there. I don't know. So you're right. How did he grasp the number of wings? The simple answer is not what I just told you. The simple answer is that the description that he's telling us is the prophecy. Meaning it's not that he stood there counting. This is what he was supposed to see in the prophetic vision. He's not recounting a story. Hey, look what I saw. He's telling us something with a message. The Rambam goes into what the wings represent, etc. But that's not our issue right now. Let's first try to understand what he's telling us simply. And then one day maybe we'll understand more. Pasuk Zayin. By the way, when I say one day maybe we will understand more, me included. It's not that I understand what's going on. I said that at the onset. Okay. V'ragleihim regel yeshara. The feet of these angels, the chayos angels, were straight. We're going to get back to that because we emulate that. When we stand with our feet together in Shemona Esrei, we're emulating the angels in that. And the reason that's important also maybe needs to be discussed. V'chaf ragleihim k'chaf regel egel. And the bottom of their foot looked like the foot of a calf. And our sages say that these are the angels the Jews saw when they were crossing the Yamsuf. And that's why when they thought Moshe died, they said, let's create an angel that's the closest thing we saw to God, which was these angels. And then they said, well, what about those angels can we recreate? And then they said, the calf. You saw legs of calf, you see? So, okay, so that's why the angel, we'll see later on, not here. In Isaiah, the Navi describes that the angels would use two of their wings to cover their legs. So that their legs, which look like calf's legs, would not be a reminder of the golden calf. V'no'otzitzim ke'en nechoshet kalal. And the legs were shining. They were giving off light, sparks of light, as though they were pure, pure copper, which gives a shine. And so too, the legs of these angels, which are like the legs of a calf, gave off this tremendous shine. Videi Adam. And there were human hands, like human hands, mitachat kanfehem, under their wings, al arbat rivehem, on all four sides. However we understand the four sides, right? So they had human hands on all these sides. Ufnehem mechanfehem le'albatam. And their faces and their wings all corresponded to the four sides. Okay, so that's the first. I guess we should do two or three more psukim to finish the description. Choverot isha lachota kanfehem. Their wings would be right next to one another, like two friends standing arms next to one another. Lo yisabu velechtan ish lever panav yelechu. If they want to go in any direction, they don't have to turn their head because they have a face in every direction. So wherever they want to go, they could go. They don't have to turn their heads. Now, what, obviously, this is a prophetic vision. It's representing something. It's not just telling you a story. Yeah?
It seems like maybe they're not confined to space.
Okay, maybe.
Maybe when it says like four sides, it's like four dimensions possibly.
Yeah, that's what Rashi says, that it's the four directions of the world. Yeah. Udmut pineihem, pinei adam. Now you want to know what their faces looked like? I thought he described that. No, now he's going to tell you. So they have the human face, ufnei aryeh, el hayamin la'albatam, and all four of them have on the right side, that's going to be the southern side, the face of a lion, ufnei shomasimo la'albatam, the ox's face on the left. Remember the ox? The golden calf, the north, the left. Ufnei Neshel le'albatam, and each of them have the face of an eagle. Ufneihem chanfeihem pildot milmala. So I think maybe we'll pause here. We did 10 psukim in this, and we'll continue because the next two psukim seem simple, but they're not. So we'll pick up here, Bezachim, next time.